here's our cartoon JPEGs, give us lots of money for them, and we're going to build something, but they never really sort of articulate a good sense of what they're actually building. You take sort of Dudas's project, LinkStar, as an example, we're going to buy a golf course. Well, spoiler for the rest of the show, they actually did. And, you know, that's sort of an easy goal to sort of follow up on. I think it's just a lot more sort of fluffy, vague, and ambiguous with the vast majority of NFT projects where people got in because of speculation. And it's only now that the team is sort of revealing what they want to do or where they want to take it.
Hello and welcome back to Fuelcast, the NFT podcast, episode 63. Today I'm joined by a couple of C's. First and foremost, Chris K. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Great to be here. This is like bizarro world right now. It's like 60 degrees in New York and everyone in Los Angeles is complaining it's raining. What's going on? How is it where you are, Pat?
It's gotten cold again. I was walking around the other day and it was really windy. Even though it wasn't very cold, like the wind made it feel like daggers on my face. But I am heading to Vancouver on the 1st of April. So that should be warmer. And it'll be my first time in British Columbia. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Have you got a haircut, Chris K?
You are the first person that noticed this. And I've had it for about 2 weeks now.
Wow. Okay. It looks really good.
Yeah, it's a good summer cut. You know, NFT NYC is what, like 3 weeks away? I need to look good. I'm going to be going out, getting a new wardrobe. So I'm looking like especially dapper this year.
I'm having one next Thursday myself. So I'll be right there with you. Just in time for NFT NYC because it's looking a bit like a bird's nest at the moment. Corwin, how are you?
I'm doing wonderfully. It's like as CK said, it's nice and hot outside. I was like taking a walk last night and I couldn't believe it. It felt like a summer day. It's great.
Amazing. I'm very jealous. Very jealous. Yeah. I mean, it's been a very interesting couple of weeks, right? You know, Instagram sunsetting NFTs. We talked about that last week. And it just seems like the craziness doesn't stop, right? I mean, Dudas came out and said that they are no longer an NFT project or company, rather. They're an entertainment company looking to build the future of blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And this was met with a bunch of vitriol. It was also met with a bunch of like, yeah, fair enough. Like they want to go a different direction just because they started with those NFT holders doesn't mean they have to end with them. And some people were a bit in between. So, I mean, Chris K, I want to throw it to you first. I can see both sides of this. The bit where I'm really struggling to kind of reconcile the announcement with the evidence is that if you're an NFT company like Dudas, you've sold a bunch of NFTs for millions of dollars, you've made millions of dollars on secondary markets, then you've leveraged those revenues to raise VC investment, and then you've told the people the only reason that you actually got that investment that you are no longer an NFT brand. So how do you match those things up?
Were they an NFT company to begin with? Like, they sold a lot of NFTs. They sold tens of millions of dollars worth of NFTs, but that was never the goal. If it was, you know, they'd cash out and run away now. A lot of these projects, they're raising money to do something else. In Dudas's case, they want to do entertainment. You see people making games. You see people doing other pieces of software. Like, you don't call anyone who raises money on platforms like Kickstarter, a Kickstarter company. You know, I'm really glad they've came out and said this. Like NFTs, while they've fueled the growth of Dudas, and, you know, obviously, I think, you know, a Dudas without NFTs would be in a totally different place right now. You know, that's never been sort of the whole sort of goal and sort of purpose anyway. I'm just glad they've came out and said it. It really sort of clarifies to people following the project, what they are doing. You know, they're going to run this like a business. And, you know, sure, it's veering away from the sort of community ethos that allegedly exists with Web3, but
allegedly this.
Exactly. To be successful, they need to acknowledge they are building a business. They are focusing on being an entertainment brand. And they're not necessarily going to make all their decisions through the lens of, okay, how do I pander to the holders who've purchased one of my Genesis collection? So, you know, I think this makes perfect sense. And I think a lot more projects are going to be open and sort of honest with that in future. You might see some of the opposite stuff. One team I'm working closely with, I don't want to name, is sort of now doubling down on the fact that they are an NFT project. And they think that Doodles has made a bit of a sort of misstep there. But in general, it makes a ton of sense.
I think we're going to see a swath of projects follow this and some that see an opportunity to do the absolute opposite, to encourage the crowd that really hated that announcement to join forces or, you know, buy their NFTs because they are somehow going to find a way to bring value back to those holders, which, again, we've discussed on this show is a super difficult thing to do. From a regulatory perspective, almost impossible. Like, you make $10 million in an NFT company, how you create value for those holders, you have to be very careful about. And I do think that Doodles have looked at that, and they've also looked at the fact that what type of people do we want to attract to our community? They're not NFT flippers or people that are obsessed with the floor or obsessed with the price. And I think a lot of that makes sense. Corwin, I'm keen to hear your take. Obviously, you know, leading community at Floor, you've kind of seen everything in your experience from kind of people that come in, talk about the floor, people that come in and only care about the community. So I want to hear your take from that perspective.
I think Doodles has already been doing this for a long time. They just came out and was like, hey, this is what, like, officially said what they were doing. Doodles community is probably one of the more active communities I've seen in the Web3 space, and or at least the most vocal on Twitter, or maybe I'm just stuck on Doodle Twitter. I don't know. But I think the messaging from, I think the CEO's name is Poopy, right? I think the messaging was just really kind of just not off, but like, this has been going on for a while, right? They've been getting in the media business. They've been doing XYZ. They just had this other controversy though last week, which I think spiraled this, which was the sock thing. I think their community felt like they weren't being listened to. And they were like, hey, buy all our socks and you'll get a golden sock on Flow. And I think that kind of just spiraled into this message.
And you see similar things in other communities as well, like Moonbirds, after the recent sort of series of announcements, I think you have similar sort of factions in there. You know, I have a diamond bird, you know, I want trait specific rewards. I want rewards. It's all about the rewards versus building something in the longer term, you know, and I think depending on how you are sold and sort of communicated, you know, what you're getting out of it, you may have different expectations. But in general, you know, if Doodles is going to be successful, they need to be thinking from a business perspective. It can't just be, okay, this is how we reward the holders. Like, put that to the side, become a successful business, bring in lots of money, and then the answer of rewarding and creating value for holders becomes a lot easier, obviously within the bounds of what the SEC allows. I think the speculative nature of many projects is its downfall. And I think in a lot of projects I've been involved in, like, so much time you're communicating to the holders, you're putting together roadmaps, white papers, you're getting into those discussions about where the project should be going. And, you know, it's good to be having those conversations, but at the end of the day, this is not a democracy. They're not being ran as a DAO. Everyone doesn't have a vote. Someone needs to steer and guide things with the right hat on. Sure, you take the feedback, but at the end of the day, the buck stops at Poopy's desk. And they need to go ahead and make those decisions.
What a bizarre line to say. I just wanted to read a tweet by Dudas, a good friend of Floor, investor in Floor via his fund. I'm stunned by NFT projects in the midst of a bear market with their earliest supporters down bad, saying, sorry, you weren't actually the customer. You were just a financial speculator. We actually took your money to speculatively build for some future audience. Thanks, bye. If you took millions or tens of millions of dollars from customers, paid yourself handsomely, raised more VC capital at astonishing valuations, and perhaps sold some shares on secondary markets, you have a moral and ethical obligation to serve your early customers. Many projects actively encourage their customers to speculate with mysterious communications such as probably nothing, going to be a huge month, more coming soon, heads down on greatness. And now we're blaming the customer for being pissed off at non-delivery. Cry me a river. If you can't do the thing, hire someone that can. But don't blame the customer for having an expectation of a product you promised. You're ruining it for the rest of us, the people who actually do what they said they are going to do. So, Corwin, any thoughts there? Or Chris K, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, so that's totally sort of anti to my opinion, I think. But I think the bit at the end sort of really stood out in terms of, you know, if you're selling a product, you should deliver that. But the problem is so many projects didn't sell a product. Here's our cartoon JPEGs, give us lots of money for them and we're going to build something, but they never really sort of articulate a good sort of sense of what they're actually building. You take sort of Dudas's project, LinkStar as an example, you know, we're going to buy a golf course. Well, spoiler for the rest of the show, they actually did. And, you know, that's sort of an easy goal to sort of follow up on. I think it's just a lot more sort of fluffy, vague and ambiguous with the vast majority of NFT projects where people got in because of speculation. And it's only now that the team is sort of revealing what they want to do or where they want to take it.
Corwin, any thoughts there?
No, I agree a lot with what CK is saying. And I think it's just like, there's a lot of pressure on them right now because it's a bear market. And a lot of people are like very vocal, like, why is this going down? Why isn't this going up? Why is nothing getting done? When there is like a lot of things getting done behind the scenes and they're trying to run it like a business now. And things take time in business. And I think all this pent up like demand or maybe animosity towards project founders is coming out. And that's why I think like Poopy came out and was like, hey, we're not an NFT project. Like we're XYZ, right?
And I just wanted to get your perspective, Corwin. Like when, you know, when you're managing a community, and there are people with such distant takes compared to the overall North Star and goal of the project that you're kind of managing. Like, what's your usual, how do you communicate with those people? How difficult a situation is it to be put in?
To be honest with you, Pet, that really hasn't happened at Floor. Like, I could count on one hand the amount of times that happened, like at least like on Twitter and Discord, like often, like the floor price of Floor isn't discussed. People are in there discussing other projects or the app because with Floor, like they're also getting like a utility out of it, right? They have the app. They get these other things such as like partnerships or whoever else we may be working with. Like they do see benefits from that. And I guess it's kind of just not really the culture in the Floor Discord, at least, or the Floor community. Like it's been discussed before, like, oh, Floor goes down, but it's like a one and out person that comes in. And also, I think it's a lot different here because we aren't like a profile pick project, right? Like people got and are getting utility out of like, okay, I'm going to go use the app.
When you were looking at some of the messages that people were sending in the Discord, did that speak to you at all? Like from your perspective, were you kind of like, oh, he's done something wrong there. Like that's not how I would have spoken to the community, etc.?
Absolutely. I think like when Poopy was like Floor it in GTFO, like, no matter how upset you can get in situations, like you kind of got to like take a step back and be like, okay, let's solve this with, I don't want to say love, but you know, let's understand where people are coming from too. And I would never tell anyone to Floor it in GTFO.
That might need to be the name of the episode. Chris K, any final thoughts before we move on?
I think it depends. I think Corwin's right. Like, be nice to the community. Like, in customer service, you know, a good strategy is just kill them with kindness. Though, I do think you need to be cognizant of when it's actually a good time to fire your customers. If they're taking up too much time, they're bringing a lot of negativity in, give them a refund, get rid of them, get them out of there. That's, I think, a perspective that you need to be sort of thinking of as well.
Fire your customers. Floor it and get the fuck out. I mean, such varying strategies in this wild world. Next topic, Immutable and Polygon team up. I mean, this was really out of the blue. I mean, if anyone doesn't know, Immutable are a layer 2 or EVM compatible sidechain. Is that right? And they are focused fully on gaming. Are they a sidechain or are they a layer 2? Is Immutable a layer 2?
I think they're a layer 2.
Yeah, they're a layer 2.
Which is weird because I think they're trying to solve the same problem Polygon solving. So they're teaming up?
Well, yeah, I've looked at this announcement over and over again, Chris, and I'm super confused as to why this has happened. So from what I understand is that Immutable are going to be building on Polygon's new zero-knowledge EVM thing. But I don't understand why that is good for people building games.
Yeah, so a ZK roller, or I think ZK roller is the proper pronunciation, is essentially a way of doing work off-chain. And there's many reasons you may want to do that. There may be so much data that you don't want to sort of put it all on-chain. Maybe you want to protect the privacy of whoever the data relates to. Or maybe it's just computationally expensive. Or you need a sort of setup where you can be sort of a lot more reactive to changes as you're developing, let's say, a game. Where you're sort of processing stuff in a ZK rollup, that can be on another chain that's cheaper. It could be on a Web2 server somewhere. It really doesn't matter. But what is sort of significant about it is you're relying on something called zero-knowledge proof. So you're essentially sort of attesting to the blockchain, hey, this data that I've processed, this is all sort of accurate, verified, authentic, and here's a sort of proof I've calculated that you can mathematically reconstruct and sort of authenticate to prove that I'm telling the truth. For games, I can totally see the use case. You don't want everything on chain. You want your sort of certificates of authenticity that you own a sort of digital collectible, or you want a sort of record of your high score to be on chain. You don't want everything leading up to that point to have to live on a blockchain somewhere. And because you're sort of working on sort of a quick development cycle, you also probably want the sort of flexibility to be making changes right up until and after you ship the game. So that doesn't necessarily lend itself to sort of putting it all in a smart contract, shipping it once, and then you're done. I think this is sort of a really compelling offering if you're making games. Now, who knows if you can actually make fun games with this, but at least you have the building blocks to sort of get started.
So, spoken to some game Web3 friends of mine, they kind of presume that Mutable didn't really have what they needed tech-wise because they didn't have full EVM support and they've lost out on a lot of potential clients. And rather than having Darknet do that stuff, they are just partnering with Polygon, probably one for marketing purposes, but to just to, yeah, have that EVM compatibility.
Yeah, and I think EVM compatibility, like across gaming, across a lot of use cases, is significant. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why I wouldn't necessarily bet money on chains like Solana. You know, love it or hate it, the Solidity ecosystem has evolved to the point where you're sort of seeing a sort of steady intake of new developers learning the language and deploying the contracts across Ethereum, across Polygon, and across dozens of other chains. I think sort of forking that development story, you know, it forces you to make a business choice. Do I go with something like Polygon? Do I go with something like Immutable? And the more we can sort of coalesce around a standard, the better.
Corwin, what did you think of this particularly? I mean, it really does seem that NFT gaming is gaining a lot of quite real momentum now.
I think NFT gaming is getting momentum. I think publishers are talking about it more and more, and it's just a matter of time. I think it just takes like a little bit more time from these publishers because of, I'm sure it's like a heavy lift, but I just downloaded a game last week from like the Epic Game Store that has NFTs enabled on it. I thought it was a cool concept, but maybe that's just my world.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's plenty of interest. You know, as I said, I think last week, like the problem is right now, none of the games are actually any good. But like you look at sort of Sony, they recently sort of unveiled or sort of had made public one of their patent applications that covers a lot of like NFT infrastructure and sort of transfers in gaming. You've got Square Enix doing their thing. Like people are paying attention. I think they're just trying to figure out where NFTs sort of slot into that experience. And really, I think how they can bring something that is missing from the traditional approach. Because if you're just shoehorning NFTs into something for the sake of it, and it doesn't make sense, then what's the point?
Yeah, I think I mean, this leads into actually maybe something we can bring up from the show notes, which is Sony has put in a few really interesting patents, and that they're not actually as basic as I would have thought, right? If I read some of the things they've done, it was patents that allow for essentially NFTs to be moved outside of the PlayStation ecosystem to be like cross-generation. They filed a patent for if someone finishes a mission first or within the first few people, they get a limited edition NFT. Some things that we haven't really seen before, we've seen kind of adjacently with Dookie Dash and stuff like this. But I found this another really interesting story, Chris K, that I really do think there is, and again, a lot of this stuff will hit the fan and flop, but there just seems like so much capital, resource and attention now towards the gaming side of things. Just by a law of averages, something good's going to come out of it, right?
I wouldn't say that. I think especially in gaming, you know, a lot of money has been poured into things that maybe don't result in anything. You look at sort of individual titles like, say, Duke Nukem Forever. I know that's sort of old school and you might not have been born around that time. But, I think gaming, you need to be sort of following technology and you need to be making these strategic bets. Some of them pay off, some of them don't. That's just the way I think the industry goes. Going back to Sony, like, it's really interesting sort of the depth they're going into. You know, they have stuff covering in-game assets and they give examples of like skins, weapons, avatars. They have transferring games to different NFTs to different devices. I think they're just approaching it from all of the different angles. Just because they filed a patent, I don't know how active they're getting there. You know, often you file these things defensively, so like Epic or Microsoft or any of the big competitors can't go and sort of release their thing. Or at least you can sue them if you think they've infringed on your patent. I think that's going to be interesting to watch. Like, it's fascinating reading the Sony patent. I think the sort of risk is, you know, this actually sort of dampens development from other companies because, you know, this is so broad and so wide reaching. Like, if I put an NFT in a game and I use it for like an avatar, does that mean I need to now pay Sony a royalty on this? You know, there's lots of sort of interesting things that could potentially emerge around that if Sony decides to use these things defensively.
That's an interesting point that I hadn't thought of. I mean, they could just be trying to board up the walls, right? And try and stop competitors taking market share via a technology that they don't have a plan for, which is quite interesting. But, you know, how long do those patents last for, like usually in the US? Are they...
A long time.
Very long time.
Even if you don't build anything on it?
Yeah, you can... There's things called patent trolls.
That's just so dumb, man. America. Corwin, what are your thoughts on the Sony patent thing? Bit of hype or excited by this?
A bit of hype. That is all.
That's all? No other contract and content?
No, it really depends which way it goes. But, you know, Sony's in every single market, right? Sony's in games. Sony's in music, movies, electronics. Honestly, like, I think it's a cool first step for Sony, I guess, if that makes any sense.
It does. Before we move on to our next topic, I need to remind you that we are a community-led podcast by the community from Floor. And if you don't know what Floor is, it's your very own NFT portfolio in your pocket, an app that aggregates all your NFTs into one amazing interface, showing you price movements, latest sales, and so much more. Corwin, what is the latest from Floor?
Yeah, so this week, as we said at Town Hall last week, we are going to be rolling out usernames, which I'm super, super excited about.
Have you secured mine, by the way?
I haven't even secured my own, so I don't know.
Big dog pet with a DAWG.
Okay.
Yeah. Something like that.
You can go claim that. But also, Chris K actually has been working on something that I got a preview last week that I'm really excited about. Not sure exactly when that's going live, but I'm really stoked on it. CK did an amazing job.
Yeah, I think it's all live right now. People just don't know how to get it.
Oh, Let me actually check.
I'm sure some observant user may have seen it.
Oh, no, I don't see the button, though.
Yeah, if you're listening, go poke around on floor and find the secret new feature I've been building.
Have you Easter egged a product launch?
Easter is coming up, so it would be good to Easter egg something.
That would be cool. But yeah, lots of exciting things coming from floor. With our town hall last week, we did announce some things and like, yeah, I'm really excited for the future. We are doing a lot of cool things, or the team's doing a lot of cool things.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, well, I'm going to try and find that feature. But let's move on to Linkstyle buying a golf course. This was a really awesome moment because it was the first time I've seen an NFT project or a DAO with a truly almost crazy vision and goal achieve that goal. So, and maybe it says less about the industry than it should, but I've been a big fan of what Linkstyle have done since the very start. I was kind of skeptical about the ability of them to actually go through on this. And I think many people were. I wrote about it on the newsletter, my newsletter, sorry, this week.
That went to my Prebless folder.
Digging into the numbers and like just looking at their journey. I have to say, I'm thoroughly impressed. And Chris Kay, you're someone that's worked on this. I don't know how much you can say, but I'd love to hear your perspective on just how amazing this has been. For those of you who don't know, Linkstyle, a golf community who raised a bunch of money in 2021 via two different types of NFT memberships and with the goal of creating a DAO of golf fans who want to buy a golf course and change and reimagine the way golf membership works. And they've recently had a bid accepted for the Spey Bay golf course in Scotland.
Yeah, I bet all of the projects that haven't delivered anything really hate Linkstyle right now because they've gone and done it. And I remember sort of just over a year ago, right before the initial mint, I was sort of telling some friends about it and they're like, they're never going to buy a golf course. This is all a big scam. And, you know, now they've done it. What makes Linkstyle unique are sort of two things. I think you have a first-class sort of team of people behind there. These are people who've had experience building, scaling businesses. Like if anyone is going to sort of figure out a business plan to buy a golf course, it's going to be these folks. And then they've done so much with the community and pulled together sort of really a mix of folks around the world, enthusiastic about sport to the point where, you know, they're not talking about floor price. They're not sort of trying to second guess the decisions of the project founders. There's a lot of trust there. And they've been delivering value along the way, whether it's sort of deals with Carhartt and sort of some of the merchandise people, whether it's deals with courses so that you can go in and use it based on your Linkstyle pass. Like, I think the community would have been happy if they didn't buy a golf course just because of so much they've brought back already. But yeah, it's just great to see something like this succeed. And, you know, I think this will be the first of many golf courses they end up buying.
Yeah, it's great to see everything Lynx has been doing from the start. Like the fact that they have so many discounts from like all these golf places, and then you could also go, or all these like golf stores or like places to go, such as like, for example, like here in New York, we have like Five Irons. And if you go to a Five Iron, which is like this like golf simulator place where you could go with like a bunch of friends, and like they have discounts there. And then also if you want to go to courses that are members only, they have access to those, and they've always had that. I was very unsure how they were going to do this legally, but I think it's really great to see that they chose one outside the US as like their first one to pick up. So I'm super stoked, and their team is great.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, this is an NFT project that has ran things as a business, but they've also effectively layered in a lot of Web3 principles on top of that. They're an LLC. No, they're not an LLC. I think they're a C Corp, you know, big sort of evil Web2 business. But they have DAO voting. They take proposals from their members. They let them vote on it to influence the strategic direction of the business. They took a vote on whether they should put a bid in on the golf course. And I think they found the right balance of, okay, let's give the community conduits in which they can get involved in the decision making, but let's not make the entire decision making dependent on consensus within the community. At some point, Jim and others just need to step in and run it and make decisions. And it's turned out really well.
Yeah, I think it's done amazingly. I really love the kind of, they've only ever actually had 17 votes from the very start up until now. And that might sound like a lot, but 17 votes between 2021 and, when was it in 20, was it September 21, Chris K, when LinksDAO started?
No, they launched on New Year's Day 2022. And the reason I know that is like the week before Mason got the phone call, hey, can you mint our token for us? So we spent a week sort of like pulling everything together. That was like a lot of fun. Really good team to work with. One of my favorite clients personally.
Yeah. 17 votes, which means they haven't saturated the like community element of it, if that makes sense. Like a lot of like ownership DAOs really dilute the feeling of like purpose and decision making by just having too many decisions to make. And I think they've struck up that right balance of saying like, this is where you're going to have input, but the rest of it is going to be operated like a business is. That for me is the kind of balance that they've hit. And I think it's really great. I'm just, yeah, thoroughly impressed by the execution. And I mean, Corwin, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on like where you think they take this and whether or not you can see any issues with, you know, buying a golf club in Scotland when most of your audience is from the US, that kind of global side of things. Do you see any issues there?
No, I think the community overall is happy. And seeing that they get this as like a first trial and a first run to test things out and be like, okay, if this works, this works. And also Lynx has done everything from my point of view. Like, I'm not a lawyer, but legality-wise, it seems like they've done everything correctly, especially with all the experience their team has, like setting up a C-Corp and then on the sales page being like, hey, FYI, like you don't have a percentage of XYZ. This is just strictly access to get a membership. And they've been very transparent and clear since the beginning, which I haven't seen 99.99% of other projects do, right? Like, for example, some projects will have you buy something and then 3 months later, they may be like, hey, like we know this was a term of sale, but you know what? Like we're CCO now, XYZ, right? Like, no, they have been from the start very transparent about what they're doing.
Yeah, I think golf is one of those industries where you can actually sort of, you have a lot more leeway in terms of, you know, geographically where you're going to focus as well. Like typically a golfer has a high net worth. They understand that you need to travel to go to the best golf courses. You know, I think people were probably maybe expecting somewhere in the US, but, you know, Scotland, especially has some fine courses, fine weather, great food, deep fried Mars bars, the way to go, wash it down with some Lucozade. You know, I think the community is ultimately happy with the decision. You know, like I say, I think there's nothing stopping Lynx opening another course in the US, at some point in the future. And I think that's the direction they're probably going to go with this.
One of the things that I wanted to raise as well is they've done a great job of actually turning this into a business that is thinking about cash flow. Like 99% of NFT projects are just like, yeah, let's just mint more NFTs. And again, some of them will be able to do that. Artifact, Yuga Labs, the 1% are going to be able to make digital assets forever. And you know, that hay is going to keep going. But I like the way that they have already thought out in a really concerted way how they are going to make money beyond digital assets for something that is tangible in the real world, like golf. And I really like that, Chris K, because if you can create a situation where, and I know that the articles quote them wanting to have 100,000 new members over the next 12 months or whatever, which is, you know, a big target, doing that in non-NFT means, I think, is probably smart to have like some good cash flow, but also as a way to cross-sell into your NFT memberships that can remain premium in the way that they are limited and in the perks that they can have.
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely thought about it. I remember when we were working on the Mint, they shared with us a ton of docs around sort of like how much it takes to run a golf course. Because, you know, a lot of people like, oh, you win a few million dollars in the lottery, you buy a sort of yacht, and then you forget that you need to pay for fuel, crew, mooring, everything like that. Like they understand the business, and like that's why I think they've been so successful. They're definitely not pandering to the NFT community, and they know exactly what they need to do to sort of execute.
Let's move on to some more stories, wider Web3 stuff, banter, and any other business. Microsoft have created a crypto wallet. in their browser, which is interesting, but apparently it's not amazing. Have you had a look at this, Krisco?
So I don't think it's been released yet. I know some screenshots leaked, but I think that's all we've seen right now. This is interesting, but it's also disappointing at the same time. So, you know, what is cool about this? This is a platform provider entering the Web3 and specifically the wallet space. So everyone who is using Microsoft Edge has a crypto wallet that they can connect to sites with.
Which is, by the way, let's clarify, absolutely no.
Yeah, so that is the disappointing aspect. It's like, it's not really as sort of wide-reaching as it would be if they announced, hey, this is integrated into Windows or anything like that. But ultimately, like, you think, how are you going to get the next billion users into the crypto space? They're not going to come in through MetaMask or anything like that. It needs to be something that is shipping with the software or hardware platforms that they use every day. And your operating system or your web browser is the way to do that. I think Microsoft is definitely sort of committed to this in terms of they're just launching this to begin with, but I think they could take it a lot further. And like, I'm hoping this spurs on a bit of competition from Apple and probably more likely Google to integrate it within their platforms.
Does this kind of seem like the first step into like how browsers integrated 15 years ago, passwords and storing passwords and saving them, and like how Apple has like a keychain? I think this is kind of like the first like domino effect, is like Chris K was saying. Well, he didn't say it was a domino effect, but he hopes that other platforms pick this up. I kind of feel like every browser or like operating system will eventually just have like a wallets and keychain function.
I think so as well. Like, browsers are maybe a bit more difficult because, you know, you have less platform integration. Microsoft is sort of maybe an exception where they're building the operating system and the browser, similar to Apple. You know, I don't know, just being integrated in Chrome, if that would have as much of an impact, at least on the desktop side of things. But yeah, ultimately, like, this is the sort of thing you want to trust your main sort of providers with. You don't want to be downloading plugins, extensions, additional apps. You kind of have that in the password management space, but typically, you know, the apps that you can download are more sort of optimized towards, okay, you're a business, you need to sort of store passwords for your business or for your family. And that's sort of where sort of 1Password, LastPass have sort of gained a bit of market share. But like, wallet, you have your Apple wallet, you have your Google wallet, you probably have a Microsoft wallet that no one ever uses. But the more you're sort of integrated in the operating system, the more that you can claim in terms of security and also just ease of use and integration. Like, whenever I'm shopping, I use Apple Pay. Why? Because it's right in my phone. I just point my face at it. Boom, I've just bought whatever I've been looking at. It's so convenient. It's so easy. It's so secure. And if we had that experience with crypto wallets, then that's great. Even like transferability between devices, like Apple has that solved. I throw my phone away, I get a new one, restore it. It's in exactly the same state as it was before I sort of threw it away. If I throw my laptop away, I'm worried I'll never restore my MetaMask, because I'm sure I wrote down that seed phrase. I'm just not sure where I put the bit of paper. Uh-huh. And like, all of these things, like, they kill crypto through like infinite cuts at the minute. But if you can sort of smooth the edges, if you can reduce friction, maybe not everywhere, but at least in some of the key places, I think you can go a lot further. And I think you can really sort of effectively onboard folks.
Well said. The next bit was CPG announcing a $40 million raise led by A16Z to create blockchain-based games. CPG, obviously, the guys that created Eve.online. Either of you play that or have any thoughts?
Nope, but I've heard of it. EVE Online has been around for forever, correct?
Yeah. I'm pretty curious to see what they do. Obviously, had a terrible reaction from the EVE Online community and a lot of gamers, but, you know, we look past that.
That happens.
And the White House says crypto assets do not offer any fundamental value, nor do they act as an effective alternative to fiat money. Wow. That is something, eh?
Yeah, we might as well just go home.
Where are you right now? Because I'm home.
Oh, that is a good point.
I've got nowhere to go. And then general ChatGPT 4. Yeah, that's doing some things, isn't it?
Oh, I had so much fun with it last night.
Are you noticing a difference between that and the previous version? And in what way?
I wasn't the biggest user of the previous version, so I don't really know, to be honest, how different it was. But I just like asked it to make me like an automation script that I can use and put on Heroku and host as a server. And then I'm like, oh, can you do this too? And can you do this? And can you do this? And it just kept making iterations. And it was like, here you go. And it like gave me all the instructions for everything. I like couldn't believe it.
It's astounding. And like, it feels like this is moving so fast. Like, yeah, I have a similar feel as to what Web3 was like a year ago in the bull market. Like, things are changing every few weeks. GPT-4 obviously released. I think the more sort of interesting thing, though, from OpenAI was they opened up an API for ChatGPT, and it's like, I think, 20 times cheaper than their previous AI models. So, like, you can build a lot more and you can build it cheaper. And we're going to see AI just go into so many products. This week, Microsoft and Google had their dueling announcements. Microsoft is introducing Copilot in Office, where it will basically do your work for you. And then Google Docs is claiming they will be doing the same, but haven't really sort of shown as much because I think they're just scrambling to catch up.
Do you have to pay for ChatGPT-4?
GPT-4 is included if you are subscribing to ChatGPT Plus, but you're limited to the amount of prompts. So I think it's like currently saying you can do like 25 prompts every 3 hours or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm paying $20 a month for it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, I do language like lessons every day on Duolingo, and it's integrated with GPT, which is so cool. So like, it takes like where I'm at, and it's like, okay, like this is the path we're going to go down. It's like using AI to like figure out the best way for me to learn.
Yeah, like it's really making sort of Siri, Google Assistant, Alexa look really stupid right now. These sort of large language models, they're great for understanding language. You know, you can recognize what people are saying, but can you infer meaning in a traditional sense? Usually not. If you're talking to Siri, definitely not. But you throw it in ChatGPT and it is a lot more effective at both understanding what you're doing, but also producing non-templated responses and sort of summarizing, digesting content.
What was the biggest, because you've always used ChatGPT, what was the biggest change you've seen in 3 to 4? Like, is it quicker? I know you could send images now, which is really cool, but like for your daily use, is it like the coding or like, I know I have a lot of engineer friends and they told me like GPT-4 is their Stack Overflow now. So...
yeah, so you can't do the image thing yet with ChatGPT. You need to go straight to like the API to do that. What I'm finding, and this is sort of, so the main difference between the two models is like the size and, well, there's a few differences. You know, one is obviously it's multi-model, so it can recognize text, images, and other inputs, but the size of those inputs and the size of the potential outputs are significantly longer. So I think with the API, you can feed in like 25,000 words. So you can have it sort of, you know, review masses of like legal documentation or anything like that. And I think what I've noticed, especially when coding, is just it does a better job of keeping track of sort of where we're going. Like, I think ChatGPT originally was good saying, okay, can you write me a bit of code that does X? But then as you sort of started prompting and asking to do more with the code, that's where it would fall down. With GPT-4, I'm having a lot more success if I ask it, hey, can you make me an app that shows NFT floor prices? And then sort of follow through step by step how to build it. It just keeps track of the project and what we're doing. And the output, especially from a coding perspective, you know, I find a lot fewer errors or things that I need to manually sort of deal with.
Awesome. I need to have a proper play around with it because I haven't tested the new one as much.
Pat, I could send you over my account if you want to log in.
Oh, yeah, I'd love that. We do have a question, but we do need to wrap up. So we're going to leave them in for next week's. So CryptoCoco, Moonfuel, definitely answering your questions next week. Need to remind you that whatever we have said in this episode is not financial advice, just great advice. Corwin, where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ZeroXCorwin. You can follow Floor on Twitter at Floor. And you can also join the Floor Discord at discord.gg/Floor.
And Chris K?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at C. Cahonin, or you can find out at what I do at madewithmason.com.
Awesome. You can find me at Petberisha on Twitter at PETBERISHA, and you can find Floor at Floor on Twitter. We'll have more Floorcast for you next week.